You are listening to Colchonero Chat, the premier English language podcast on Atletico Madrid and a part of Into the Calderon, SB Nation's home for all things Atletico. I'm Jeremy Barron. My guest on the program today is Ewan McTeer. Ewan McTeer joins me to discuss Atletico's win over Eibar on Saturday. Are Atleti back, quote-unquote, as Antoine Griezmann claimed? Also, we'll talk about Monday's FIFA gala, which saw Griezmann receive recognition for finishing third in FIFA's Best Player Award, but not even make FIFA's Team of the Year. Pretty interesting stuff. And we'll hit a bit on the Copa del Rey return leg versus Las Palmas. Stay with us. Yeah, he was third in the Best Player Award, but didn't even get into the Team of the Year. It's pretty odd. But, you know, that's FIFA.
Yeah, it's a bit like sports day at school when you have to give everybody somewhere, so everybody has to get a ribbon and he got his third place one, so maybe they had to squeeze someone else. I don't know, was it Suarez, I guess, was the one who probably bumped him out of
it
the...
It was Suarez, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess, yeah, they maybe want to recognise Suarez somehow and make sure everyone gets some sort of recognition, but yeah.
Like, he did get, a participation ribbon, like, good job, you tried, like a gold star.
Yeah.
I guess that's what that means. But none of Barcelona's players even went, so that's not really a great look for FIFA, holding this big ceremony, this big opulent ceremony, and, you know, you have players from two of the best teams in the world not going.
Yeah, exactly. And then Griezmann was, you know, he looked a bit lonely in some of the pictures you saw as the only Atleti player there. He was, I don't even think there were any other French players there, so he really
right.
looked quite lonely in some of the pictures.
Yeah, I kind of feel bad for him.
Yeah,
really was no, just no.
Well, he was all smiles. He put on a brave face and he went there. So
yeah, good on him. Yeah, he was the only Frenchman there because Pogba wasn't there.
No, I don't think so.
None of the none of the other French players were there. Interesting. Yeah, poor Antoine.
Well, yeah, just be extra inspired for this Las Palmas game if he gets a run out and for the weekend, so maybe he'll just come back and want to get back with football.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone would appreciate that. Keep the scoring run going.
He missed out last month. He was voted in France GQ. He was voted Sportsman of the Year, French Sportsman of the Year.
Yeah, he was.
But he had to miss that award ceremony because it was the night of the PSV game where he was doing what he does best, scoring goals rather than going to the ceremony. So at least he got to go to one of them. So.
True. I mean, scored a goal in the other one. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to start with a La Liga whip around?
Sounds good.
Because, you know, we're all about the other teams in La Liga. We are Atleti-centric, of course. You know, there's 19 other teams in La Liga. 17 match days down. 21 more to go. We're almost halfway home. We'll start on Friday. Espanyol 1, Deportivo La Coruña 1. Just the second time in 9 that Deport have not scored multiple goals. Espanyol do what they do best, get a draw. It's their 8th of the season. Real Madrid 5, Granada 0 on Saturday. Madrid still unbeaten as we get into mid-January. Las Palmas 1, Sporting Gijón 0. Sporting Gijón still in a relegation fight, just 3 wins from 17. And Anoeta, this was a stunner. Real Sociedad 0, Sevilla 4. Sevilla coming back from the Copa del Rey embarrassment quite strong. Wissam Ben Yedder with a hat trick. I love this Sevilla team. So explosive. So much in attack. The way Sampaoli has come in there and kind of revolutionized them, it's been great to watch. They're really fun.
Yeah, this was a big statement win. That was, Sevilla and Real Sociedad were probably two of the more surprising teams this season in terms of the teams that you didn't expect to be as high as they are. So it's quite interesting to see how this one would have went. And yeah, I don't think even people who thought Sevilla might win this, I don't think anyone expected by 4 goals. So, you know, fair play to them. They're looking dangerous.
Very. And Sociedad's highs have been very high and their lows have been pretty low. Thinking about the 5-1, thinking back to the 5-1 against Deport and the 4-0 this weekend, they've also beaten Atleti this year. So when they've been good, they've been very good. When they have been bad, they've been pretty bad. On to Sunday, Athletic Club 0, Alaves 0 in the early game there. Alaves continue to pick up points. That's 22 points for them in 17 weeks. Very comfortably mid-table, 10 points off the drop. Real Betis 2, Leganés 0. Real Betis continuing to come back after Gus Poyet's dismissal. Celta Vigo 3, Malaga 1. This was a kind of a crazy game. Malaga conceding more goals. And Iago Aspas, such an overlooked, underrated striker, I think, gets on the score sheet again. And finally, the centerpiece, the showpiece on Sunday, Villarreal 1, Barcelona 1. Manic game, a fantastic game. Lionel Messi with a trademark free kick to get a point for Barcelona. Crazy game that was. The one result we did not talk about, Eibar 0, Atletico Madrid 2. Eibar 0, Atletico Madrid 2 at Ipurua. Atleti back into the top 4 with this win, plus the so Real Sociedad's loss later on Saturday and Villarreal's draw on Sunday. Ewan, generally speaking, Eibar very dangerous in the first half, not as much in the second half. What changed between the first and second halves?
Well, as someone who loves Juan Fran, I would just tell you look at what player came on at halftime and it was Juan Fran.
Yep.
And that's a little bit simplistic, but I think that Simeone afterwards said he put Juan Fran right back, not right wing, as you point out, for Vassal's goal. And he said it was just, he was on guard, he didn't want to lose him. But I think this was probably Vassal's maybe worst game since he's arrived at the club. He really struggled against Inouye on that side. He potentially could have given away a penalty. It was a strange one. He sort of was on the ground and sort of nudged his hand towards the ball. He fouled Inouye a couple of times. Obviously picked up his yellow card. They really went down that left hand side in the first half, Eibar, and were getting a lot of success from it. And then in the second half, that was just not an option for them. So I think that was one of the big changes, I would say. There was some talk at halftime of whether he would get rid of, either remove Jimenez or put him back in centre defence after the interesting defensive midfield experiment. But he kept with it, and they ground out the win. I don't know what you thought of the Jimenez defensive midfield role. We talked about it a little bit last week about how they'd used him there in some of the less important games. But yeah, Simeone went for it in, you know, a really tough away game, and it was an interesting one.
It was definitely a success. The experimentation in a difficult trip away, it worked this time. We've talked about it from the Guijuelo game last month on. Simeone has tried to make this team more versatile, has tried to offer players different roles, different options, and a little hit and miss on Saturday. Much better from Jose Jimenez than Jaime Versalico. Versalico had a really tough game, really tough first half. Inouye just ran him, anyone who tried to mark him on the left-hand side ragged. And Versalico had, there should have been a penalty to Eibar, really. Handball in the box, very clearly handball. Kind of smacked it away with his left hand. So a bit of misfortune there. I thought Jose Mal was great and in defensive midfield. Thought he was fantastic. Looked very composed, which we don't often say of him. Looked very composed, very comfortable, especially as the game moved along. And it was a new setup. It was 4-1-4-1. He got kind of this entire section of the pitch to himself in front of the back four, which I think he thrives most in.
Yeah, he had space. He was like in front of the back four. But what I found interesting afterwards was looking at the stat sheet at 4-4-2, where they mapped the sort of average position of the players. He was almost in line with Savage and Godin. He dropped back so many times, and I think it was one of Simeone's, you know, explicit instructions was any time Eibar tried to attack from the wings with a cross into the box, which they do a lot, here in the box as well. Three centre-backs defending those balls into the box, and he won the ball in his own penalty area 9 times in that game, as well as, you know, I think he got 4 interceptions, it was, in the sort of defensive midfield area. But yeah, at times it was almost like a 5-4-1. He dropped so deep to join, and he played really well there. Disrupted anything Ibar were trying.
Yeah,
and then when they were trying to go to the wings, he was there to meet the cross that they put in.
Yeah, I noticed a lot more in the second half that he would drop deep and operate as a third center back between Savage and Godin. But big game for him. It was a bit of a surprise to see him in the starting 11 because he was part of a midfield that wasn't going to keep possession, that wasn't going to keep circulate the ball. You're talking about he's in a midfield with Gabby, Koke, and Saul, and Griezmann eventually moved over to the wing. But you're in a midfield that is not going to keep the ball much. And it worked. Ibar really, really focused on the wings. As I mentioned, Inouye in particular, they had a lot of the ball, particularly in the first half. I think they managed around 60% possession. A lot of danger, but not a lot of dangerous chances, and that is key. Because Atletico are fine with absorbing and soaking up the pressure and soaking up possession, just absorbing all these blows. But if you can't create dangerous chances against Atletico, then you're going to run into trouble, and that's what happened to Ibar.
Yeah, there weren't many clear sights of goal. They had the shout was, you know, that, but again, that was really just a mistake. Besalchko, it was an opening of the Atleti defence. And then there was one moment towards the end of the first half where Sergio Henrique just sort of appeared in the box and a cross in sort of went through everybody and fell to him, you know, one-on-one in the six-yard box. And he picked the worst time, I think, to forget how to work his feet, and the ball just sort of trickled out for him. It was probably the only time dominant for Ibar actually got through and had a one-on-one clear chance to test Moya, and Enrique kind of let it go. So I think Atletico would have taken that at the start of the game because Ibar had been so strong at home this season. They'd only lost once, and I think Atleti would have taken, you know, a first Ibar only get one good chance. And then in the second half, it was mostly Atleti. But, I mean, Ibar had a bit of a spell after conceding the goal where there were a few scrambles in the box. But again, there weren't any clear one-on-one chances.
Yeah, and the Sergio Henrique chance that you mentioned, his first touch left him at the absolute worst time. If he'd gotten on top of that ball, it would have been just an easy goal. But that's the way the ball bounces sometimes. And really... Yeah. Thought that Ibar were well on top in the first half. Atleti really struggled on the pitch. It was a very icy pitch, a very cold day, and Ibar looked definitely on top. And in the second half, Atleti worked their way back in it, and then Saul scored. An offside goal appeared.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was an offside goal. There was no real doubt about that. But there was a nice, or a corner even, and it was nice to see Atleti. From a set piece, something they did, you know, week in, week out almost a couple of years ago, and something they've really struggled with this season. So, yeah, okay, it was an old battle. It worked. If he'd just been a couple yards past the last defender, then we'd all be talking about what a sort of neat move it was. And Simeone said after the game that, you know, they'd worked on that in the training ground. They wanted to have an alternative, and they thought this was the kind of game where you've got to unleash it and try and find any kind of way you can to win it. So, it was a nice little move.
Yeah, and you don't see this team take many short corners. Very quick.
At all?
Yeah, like at all. I can't really even recall one. A great decision, a really well executed. Felipe Luis with a brilliant, brilliant cross to hit Saul's head. And yes, he was quite offside, but... It's unfortunate for the hosts, but it put Atleti ahead. And then, as you mentioned, there were some very nervy minutes after that. More scrambles in the box, but nothing really threatening Miguel Angel Moya. And that was the problem. Nothing. I think he made one or two saves in this game, and that's just not enough.
He saves, but none of them were. There was the one right in the first minute where he had to kind of block a kind of awkwardly bouncing ball, and then there was a sort of shot straight in the middle of the goal from a cross midway through the first half, and then he took a lot of goal kicks, but he wasn't threatened all that much.
And we talked about one sub making an impact and Juan Fran negating Takashi Inoue on the left-hand side. How about Kevin Gamero coming on and setting up Antoine Griezmann, Griezmann's goal? It's finally ending his league goalless drought with kind of a, not really a carbon copy, but a pretty similar move to the goal we saw in the Copa del Rey against Las Palmas.
Yeah, it was really similar. That sort of run that he does, bursting through, and the defender doesn't know whether to go to Gamero or to watch Griezmann. And then, Griezmann's so talented that even when Gamero plays the pass, maybe a little bit, almost too late, he almost hits it a bit too wide, and you think that Gamero's got the angle's been maybe a bit too much. He still finds a way to finish, and yeah, they've got a nice little partnership going on. And yeah, we talked a bit about Gamero last week and about the goals and he might not have scored as many as people would have hoped when he signed, but he's been providing, he's been setting up, and it's the same with Griezmann. Even when he wasn't scoring, he was setting everyone else up. So yeah, they've got a nice little partnership. Gamero's out for the cup game. He's got an illness, yeah, so that's a bit of a shame. But yeah.
But looked very good Saturday, and there definitely has been criticism with Gamero's goal record and with the easy chances that he misses, but he's supplying. I think all but one or two of his league assists have gone to Griezmann. I think his four assists in the league, and I want to say five in all competitions, they've almost all gone to Griezmann. So that's a great partnership. Griezmann hasn't really, honestly, think about Griezmann's Atletico career. He hasn't found truly great chemistry with any of his partners. And the Griezmann-Mandzukic tandem worked for a while, then Mandzukic stopped scoring and stopped doing really much of anything. There was never much of a rapport with Jackson. His chemistry with Torres is sometimes really good, sometimes not so good. But with Gamero, it's a lot more natural. They look to have a really nice understanding.
Yeah, they do. So we'll see how long that continues.
Yeah, let's hope for quite a bit. And pretty much from there, Atleti saw it out. So a 2-0 win, they're back into the top four. Kind of a vintage performance. Atleti suffered a bit, got lucky a couple times, but overall a pretty good performance and enough to get to pick up the 3 points. And again, the 4-1-4-1 formation, that's something to look out for. Atleti rolled that out toward the end of last season, and it worked pretty well. Got Atleti into position for a double. And Simeone's brought it back this time, but with more versatility. So we'll have to see how that continues. After this, we'll talk a bit about Las Palmas and Antoine Griezmann and the FIFA Gala. I forgot to mention one scoreline in our La Liga whip round. It's a game you and I talked about a little bit yesterday. Osasuna 3, Valencia 3.
Oh yeah!
Yeah, what a game!
That.
And you said,
yeah, this was one because this is probably the two most crisis-stricken teams in La Liga at the moment, and they were going head to head, and I don't think any of them come out of that one feeling really positive.
They really shouldn't. It was a bad game. It was a
Valencia
game.
Blew it at the Osasuna. Probably felt they were there for the team. Before the game, conceded in the first minute. So, it's two teams in crisis. Three both have terrible defences, both in the top five in terms of the worst defences. And then they were both teams had their two starting centre backs out and right wingers at right backs out. And it was a goal fest, but not from much attacking quality, just from a lack of defensive quality.
Just from these two teams being who they are. Osasuna still bottom. Valencia rapidly working their way to the bottom. Talk about a crisis. Yeah, Valencia are enveloped in the crisis. Let's talk a little bit about Las Palmas, the return leg of the Copa del Rey. By the time this podcast comes out, this game will have been finished. Most likely it will have resulted in Atleti moving on to the last eight of the Copa del Rey for the fifth year in a row. No Kevin Gamero, as we talked about. He's out with the flu. Yannick Carrasco still recovering from an Achilles injury. Looks like it's a bit more serious than first thought. Thiago, Augusto, Jan Oblak all recovering from long-term injuries. And Thomas Partey has linked up with his national team, Ghana, for the African Cup of Nations. Nico Gaitán and Angel Correa did not play this weekend, despite what looked like kind of a clear need for them, as Atleti played three central midfielders again. Well, technically four, actually. As Atleti played a bunch of central midfielders, neither Correa nor Gaitán played on Saturday. Bit interesting decision that. Can we expect one or both of them to start today?
Yeah, we have to be careful what we say, because we could look very silly by the time this comes out.
And, that's true.
None of our predictions have come true, but yeah, I feel at least one of them will start. Obviously, all the players you mentioned there are out, and I think reading into how the training went on Monday, looks like Gabby and Felipe Luis will be rested as well, and maybe Griezmann, although he has been included in the squad. But other than that, I think Simeone really wants to win the cup this year, and it looks like a pretty strong team. Las Palmas have a really, they're almost conceding this tie. They're raising the white flag. They look like they're going to rest most of their key players, Boateng, Rocky Mesa. I think Atletico won't have that weaker team, but there should be a place for Gaitán, and yeah, maybe Correa will maybe start ahead of Griezmann, or Griezmann will play the first half, and then assuming it's kind of wrapped up by halftime, maybe Correa comes on after the break.
Yeah, and that's the hope, that this gets over and done with pretty quickly. It's probably going to be a pretty low intensity affair, and probably not going to be much to speak of, we hope. Obviously, again, when this comes out, this game will have been likely long over. But Atleti carry a 2-0 advantage from the first leg, the 2-0 win on Gran Canaria last week. They carry it into this leg here. And barring something really kind of spectacular, Atleti all but set to advance to the quarterfinals of the Copa del Rey for the fifth year running, as it looks like they're really going for the cup this year. And we'll see, depending on who they draw in the quarterfinals. But it looks pretty good for them indeed. Antoine Griezmann, again, was at the FIFA gala yesterday, the best gala, the only representative of Atletico there. He was there pretty much to win a participation medal, like a good job, good effort medal, as Cristiano Ronaldo was officially named the FIFA best player for 2016. Which didn't really surprise anyone. Griezmann finished third in the running for that award, as well as the Ballon d'Or. What was surprising was that Griezmann was left out of FIFA's World 11 team. Ewan, what did you think of this?
I think anyone's that. Like we were saying, you'd be the first in the world, but you put in the World 11 team. This was the one to sort of nudge Griezmann out of that 11. Yeah, it was a bit of a weird one. He was going to be the first Atleti that team since Alan 12, so a bit disappointing for Atleti, but then argue about these teams, you know, all the, it seems every some pub has released team of 2019, and sometimes Green, but sometimes he's not. What's almost surprising to say then, Griezmann's, because you look and you have Ronaldo, Messi, and Suarez, you know, it's hard for even Griezmann to break into that, I suppose. If you're playing as a centre forward, he maybe plays a big one-off role better than Griezmann, and then you'd maybe only find a place for Griezmann on the right wing, the right front three role where Messi's going to be. So I'd say the more surprising omission was Diego Godin, who's, I don't know what he has to do to get into that team, but once again, he missed out. You had Piqué and Ramos, I think it was. And yeah, it's, I always find Godin's omission from these Team of the Years perhaps more surprising than the front three decisions.
Yeah, Neymar didn't make this team either, and you know, Neymar I think was fourth or fifth in the voting for this award, for the Ballon d'Or certainly. I can't recall exactly where he was in the FIFA Best Player, but I don't think I'm very far off. So it's just the back four in general, with Dani Alves, Marcelo on the way, on the left and right hand sides, and PK and Ramos. You know, Dani Alves's inclusion is a bit surprising. Again, I'm not really sure what Godin has to do. I guess he has to score late goals like Ramos does. It's difficult. But see, you aligned this team in a 4-3-3 because you have Iniesta, Cruz, and Modric in midfield. Like, I don't think anyone really has a problem with that. You raised the point that it was Suarez who kind of kicked him out of the team. I would complain about that, but Luis Suarez scored 60 goals last season. And he's got 12 in La Liga this year. He's probably going to have a 30-goal season by the time we're done. So you want to include Griezmann. Griezmann was deserving of it because he was Atletico's, I guess, most valuable player, and a guy who was, you know, based on the voting for the awards, a top three player in the world. In theory, he is. I'm not sure in practice he always is, but in theory, he finishes in the top three of those awards. He's one of the three best players in the world. And it's a little strange that he didn't get into the team, despite some very good and other very deserving players. Griezmann is not the only good footballer out there, of course. But it's a little strange to have him that high up on to have him in those short lists and not have him in this best 11. It's strange while also being, I guess, acceptable.
Yeah, and I think with these awards as well, it's you always have to wonder whether people are really looking at 2016 or if they're looking at the 2015 season. Because Dani Alves' inclusion was a bit of a strange one. And then I think you look at Suarez, and you know he probably does deserve to be in it if you are speaking specifically about 2016, because the second half of his 2015-16 season was just incredible, as was his first half of the 16-17 season. Whereas I guess Griezmann, if you're picking a player for the 2015-16 season as a whole, maybe he has more of a chance then, because he's been a bit more consistent. These awards are always a little bit you don't want too much time pulling your hair out about which player's been included and which one hasn't, because sometimes the voting's a little bit odd, sometimes the formation depends what players are going to get in and what ones aren't. Are you going to argue that the Gareth Bale, for example, Neymar players are probably better than Dani Alves and Marcelo, but you have to pick the players for the formation, I guess. So that's how it works.
I think this principle too could be applied to the Champions League team of the year, in which Griezmann was the only Atleti representative from a team that made the Champions League final. Five Madrid players, three Barcelona players, Gigi Buffon, Leo Bonucci from Juventus, and Jerome Boateng from Bayern Munich. But Griezmann, the only a representative from Atletico in the Champions League team of the year, which I think is a bit more of a bone I can pick, because this team made the final.
Yeah, several. I mean, how Saúl was missed out of that one is, it's beyond me. I mean, I wouldn't argue Saúl needs to be in the team of the whole of 2016, but for his Champions League performances in particular, I think Saúl should have been in there. And yeah, you could pick 1, 2, 3, maybe the whole Atleti backline as well have a case to be considered.
Yeah, at very least, Godin. Saúl has had a really strong case. Godin had an extremely strong case. Jan Oblak had a very strong case. Possibly someone else from the Atleti's backline, maybe Juan Fran, who was very strong as the Champions League progressed. Felipe is always in consideration. But yeah, that's something I struggle with more than FIFA's best 11. FIFA's best 11 has always been kind of wonky and should not be taken super seriously. If you have a team that made, again, the Champions League final, a second one in 3 years, didn't win it, but getting up to that game, you had to knock out three previous European Cup winners, and including the defending champions of that competition, the holders, Barcelona, and then Bayern Munich, and then he gets to the final. And it wasn't just Griezmann. If fans had watched it, then they would have known that, I feel.
Yeah, you wonder how much that team changed based on that penalty. If Atletico win that based on one or two kicks going, and she's this way or that way, do you still get Real Madrid players in that team? Probably. So I think, and you can make the same argument, Ronaldo winning in the Ballon d'Or and these kind of competitions. I mean, people are voting based on what one with his team, or they're did. You're just looking with your eyes at the performances. So yeah, I don't think you'd have had five Real Madrid players in that team. Say Juan Fran had scored his penalty, and whoever was next had hit theirs off the post. So it comes down to fine margins and the sort of the narrative that's been written, and everyone has the images in their head of all these five Real Madrid players collecting the trophy, and sort of look back with a sort of different view on their Champions League performances once you know that they ended up winning it.
Yep, to the winners go the spoils. It's certainly applicable here. But onward and upward, Atleti continuing, will continue to try to break through, making it a third Champions League final in 4 years. We're veering slightly off topic here, but making a third Champions League final in 4 years is tough, but not impossible. Just going to say it's not impossible. What else, Ewan? Anything else?
From the gala?
Gala, Eibar, Las Palmas, anything?
Not so much. I think it's been a fantastic start for to the year. I mean, especially when you consider all the travelling they've done with the Saudi Arabia trip, and then all the way down to Las Palmas, and then all the way up to Eibar. I think to start that off with two victories, two clean sheets, two Griezmann goals, you really couldn't have asked for much more. And they're set up quite well for the Real Betis game this weekend. They've had some really, really big momentous wins over Betis over the years. It was Betis they beat when they went top of the league in 13-14. That was the same day as the Clásico, and they just sort of, everybody was focused on that Clásico. I think it was a 4-3-1 at the Bernabéu to Barcelona, and everyone was focused on that, and everyone looked at the papers the next day, and you didn't get to Atleti until about 20 pages in. But when you did, you realised their 2-0 win at Betis had put them top of the league. So I think that's quite an exciting game for them. They should win that at home, and can continue this 2017 in a sort of positive vein.
Yeah, Betis been very strong at home since Victor Sanchez came on board, and generally playing better. Danny Ceballos becoming more of an essential player like he was last year under not Gus Poyet. It should be a good one. That's coming up on, what is it? That's a Saturday game. Yes, yeah, that's Saturday afternoon in Madrid.
Yeah.
That should be a good one. And we'll be back here on Colts Narrow Chat to talk about that game after it has concluded. In the meantime, that'll just about wrap it up for this edition of Colts Narrow Chat. Remember to like us on Facebook, follow the blog on Twitter at InstaCalderon, follow me personally at JB Barron, follow Ewan at EMcTier. You have anything to plug, Ewan?
I wrote a piece on Godin actually week, and it's up on These Football Times. It's really just about his whole kind of career and life, but there's obviously a good deal of Atletico goodness in there. You might have remembered it. A little goal he scored at the Camp Nou a few years ago, so that gets a mention. It's on These Football Times. If you Google that and Diego Godin, it should pop up. And something I think Atletico fans might enjoy reminiscing about.
Yeah, go read that. Lots of stuff you may not know about Diego Godin. Highly recommended. You should go read that. All right, we will be back post-Betis game on Saturday to talk about it and a whole lot more as ever on Colts Narrow Chat. Remember to listen and subscribe. Listen to all new and archived episodes and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Acast. iTunes, Stitcher, and Acast on all three platforms. Leave a review, leave a rating if you are so inclined. We'd really appreciate it. Really help us out. And we will catch you next time on the program. Thanks for listening. Adios.